We're doing Chazonish Emunah Bitachon. We had discussed previously the idea that one has to develop one's traits, one's characteristics. The idea that developing one's traits is not disjointed from the concept of Yirat Shamayim, awe of heaven. The idea that the two go hand in hand, and development of traits means that we also tackle our weaknesses. It's very tempting to only work on the area we're strong at. But self-development means I tackle the things that are difficult for me. So one person will say, it's easy for me to be on time. There are people like that. So I'm going to work on being punctual. The next guy's going to say, it's easy for me not to get angry. So I'm going to work on not being angry. Well, that's the way we usually go. We take the path of least resistance, and then we feel very positive. Chazanish said, real development means I tackle every part of my personality and work on it. And the parts that I'm weak at, I also work on them. And that's where I start developing. Now, the Chazon Ish had stressed that development means I look at the Shulchan Aruch, and that's my system. And with that system, I develop myself. Very often, people are tempted to all kinds of highfalutin ethics that have nothing to do with Torah. And technically, by the law of the Torah, we would side with one person in an argument. But if you don't know that, then you could side with the other party. And you could fight vehemently in the name of justice. But who said you're doing what's right? So we move forward. Ve'omnam, we're on page Memtet, the eighth section of the fourth chapter. Ve'omnam ergel b'dikduk adin, but the habit of being meticulous, taking care to be accurate in doing it right, getting the law accurately correct, neged midotav ativiyot, even though it will sometimes be in conflict with one's own nature. Sometimes I would think I should go a different route, and suddenly the halacha says this is what you're supposed to do. And at different stages of one's development, this plays itself out differently. So when a person starts out learning about Judaism, it could be that he thinks, I understand not to eat pork, and I understand not to eat shrimp, but I don't understand what's the problem with eating a cheeseburger. It's kosher cheese and kosher meat. What's the problem? Right? That was the argument with the McDonald's owner here in Israel. He wanted a kosher sign because he said, my cheese is kosher and my meat is kosher. What's you guys' problem, right? True story. When McDonald's initially opened up here in this country. So sometimes when we start out, it plays itself out on one level. Then we develop and it plays itself out on another level. And the more you develop in Torah, the more you start noticing that the things that bothered you earlier, you're okay with. But now you have greater details, you have greater knowledge, you have greater understanding, and your questions are more sophisticated. And you run into new topics where you say, wait, that does not resonate with me. So there will always be times where the Torah is there to instruct us, and it does not jive with us. I told you guys that for years, I was already teaching here in the Machon, and I was very uncomfortable with the mitzvah of a circumcision. Brit Milah. Yeah, it's a mitzvah, but I was uncomfortable with that mitzvah. That's why I forced myself to learn to circumcise. I said, there's something wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with the mitzvah. But it took me a few decades of life to come to that realization that if I'm uncomfortable with it, then I have to work on myself. There's nothing wrong with the mitzvah. There's something wrong with Netanel. So took me some time, and then I started working on it. There will always be things in the system of the Torah where a person says, I wouldn't have said that. Now, this is a very important point because this is where the Torah is our safety net. Those people who say, I'm going to work with the Torah so long as I understand it, well, that's what the nation said. Remember, Hashem offered the Torah to the nations, and each nation asked what's written in it. So the Yishmaelim said, what's in the Torah? Hashem said, don't steal. They said, we can't do that. That's a given in our culture. Wait, why did God give them the hardest mitzvah? Why couldn't God tell the Yishmaelim, it says in the Torah, a different mitzvah, let's see what other mitzvah, don't eat pork. Okay, they don't eat pork. Why couldn't Hashem have told them a mitzvah that would have resonated with them, that did jive with them? Because the second they asked the Ribbono Shel Olam the question, what's written in it? What they were saying is, it's got to go through my mind, and if it makes sense to me, I'm going to do it, and if not, not. But I'm God, and I'm giving you the Torah. The people say, right, but if you want us to adhere, it's got to make sense to us. You've thereby limited the Torah. Of course, there are elements where the Torah has to, the basis of the Torah, the fundamentals of the Torah, the concept that there is a God, He gave us the Torah, this is what He wants us to do, you have to understand that, otherwise you haven't hit square one. But after you've hit square one, you understand it's God talking, and this is what He said, so then you can't limit Him to our understanding, because if you're doing that, then you've lost the whole essence of the Torah. So most of the Torah will resonate with us. The more we learn, the more will resonate. But there will always be areas where you say, I wouldn't have said that. The Torah said it, okay, I'm going to do it, but I don't understand that. You see it in the Torah and you see it in our sages. Now, we have many pshatim in the story of the Akedah. And I could give a class, and I've given classes, I can give an hour and a half on why the Akedah makes sense and why it's perfect. After the whole class, you ask me deep down inside, am I comfortable with it? No. So we could talk about the Rashbam, and we could talk about the Ibn Ezra, and we could talk about Rashi, and we could talk about the Medrash Tanhuma, and we could talk about the Medrash Rabbah, and we could talk about many different paths, and the Radal's long piece on the Akedah. We can talk about many explanations, and I'm not contesting their validity. But at the end of the day, after all the explanations, there's still something within me that says, I'm not comfortable yet. There are still things there that bother me that I don't have answers to. And that will happen. The key here is that if I've developed the respect for the system, then and that we have to develop, so then that's why the book began with understanding, why should I even believe in the system? How do I understand the system to be true? The Chazon Ish worked his way up. What is Emunah? What is Bitachon? And from there, the Chazon Ish brought us to this point where the practical application is we want to get into the habit that we're going to be diligent, we're going to be accurate in our observance of the mitzvos, and even where there are elements that are counterintuitive. V'neged nitiyotav betolato, and sometimes it's against the person's inborn nature. There are people who say, I was not built for waking up in the morning before 12 o'clock. Come on. Different people, different natures. Come on. But you're supposed to say Kriya Shema before 12 o'clock. Okay, that's for everyone else. But come on, I have my nature. So maybe you have to get up and say Kriya Shema and then go back to sleep. Maybe you have to get up and down and then go back to sleep. Maybe you have to find the way to work with the system. But there are things that run against the person's nature. That's true. מרגילין אותו לשום את שבט מושלים בחף התבונה ואת הרסן מיד השכל. That habit that I'm going to work with the system of halacha, and it's not always going to be the most natural thing for me, well, that gets us into the custom that our mind rules. That gets us into the system that we have this muzzle called the mind. I'm not only going to do what I feel like doing. Umagbirim bilibo, and this strengthens within one's heart, hahakara hatmidit, that constant recognition, lehikana laregesh apnimi velamatzpun haatzil, that a person subdues himself to that more inner sense, that conscience that is of a higher nature. Every one of us was given a higher conscience. I don't know how many of you have joined Gear forums. I don't recommend them. But when I started out here, so I did join forums. They had then on MSN a forum for Gerim, and they had somewhere else, I don't remember. I joined two forums, and the themes kept repeating themselves. People said, I've researched this religion and that religion, and it's only when I started seeing Judaism that something within me said, that's right, that just fits. And it's not something I could put my finger on, and it's not something my logic can attest to. I don't know. I never experienced it. If I wouldn't have seen from within the forum where people are talking between themselves, not to impress anyone else, people are talking honestly, open-hearted, this I agree with, this I don't agree with, this makes sense to me, this I don't make sense to me. This I saw this as a recurring theme. The Chazon Ish says we have an inner conscience that's on a higher level than the recognized conscience. And when we adhere to the system of the Torah, and even though it doesn't always jive with us, there's something within us that says, yeah, that's right. I'm doing what's right now. Even though at that moment, there are other parts of you that say, I don't want to do that. Your phone rings, there's an SMS on the phone. Now, it happens to be Shabbos, and you look at your watch, and there are another 10 minutes to Shabbos. And what you want to do is go look at that SMS. And you tell yourself, I shouldn't do that. Shouldn't have left the phone on for Shabbos, right? And when you take control of yourself, and you don't do it, Something within you says, I did what was right. Now, we'll expand on that in a second, but yes.
Don't they at some point in time, like, doesn't a Jew naturally go across something in Torah or in Halakha that they don't necessarily agree with, and that I won't call it, yeah, that struggle, you know, that makes Judaism realer.
I would like to say,
even though you were born into it, you know, it's not just, okay, that's good. It's like, wait a second, I know this is good, but why? Why am I supposed to do it like this?
I don't know if most people take the time or have the courage or the know-how to go through the rigorous process that a ger or chozer b'tshuva goes through. You're here at Machon Meir.
Is that the same course of study that?
No, because what happens is a child grows up and it's second nature for them, and it should be that way.
Right.
And most people, parents and educators included, are not interested in the child having the questions that a child should have. The questions that a ger and a chozer b'tshuva have, every person should have. You're right. They're legitimate questions, they're important questions, and as you said, when a person works on them, then a person develops a real connection. Some of the commentaries, Rav Huttner writes this in the Pachad Yitzchak, that Yitzchak's job was much harder than Avram's job. Because Avram worked from scratch, and he figured it out, and that's all he had to do. Yitzchak was born into Avram's house with a prophecy that he was supposed to be the continuation of Avram. It's like the kid, like Bill Gates' daughter, right? How's she ever going to make a million? You know, how's she ever going to feel like she made a million, right? How's she ever going to feel any accomplishment? So Yitzchak was born into a house where it was a given that he was the future, and now Yitzchak had to find his own self-identity, start from scratch, come to a realization there is a Ribbono Shel Olam, question everything, and come back to that conclusion in a real way. Not in the way that would be easy, right? Yeah, sure, makes sense, right? Dad said so. I'm the continuation, so yeah. You know, when they come to you and they say, do you promise to be loyal to the family? We want to give you the inheritance of $50 million. What are you going to say? Gee. Right, so that's where Yitzchak was. But the greatness of Yitzchak was that he did it. That he didn't just say, well, Dad figured it out and he had prophecy, so this is right, I'm going that route. He started from scratch and he came to a slightly different conclusion than Avram, in the sense that Avram's Judaism was chesed, the stress was chesed. You'd think that Yitzchak would be more chesed. No, Yitzchak is din. And that shows that Yitzchak worked from scratch, and that's why he was able to develop his own strength within the service of Hashem, which was totally different. We would even think it's a little antithetical to his father, Din and Chesed. But that brings us to the final point. I remember Rabbi Avram Feuer, our 11th grade Rebbe. He told us this Dvar Torah. He said, we think of Avram Avinu, tis the season, right? And we think of Santa Claus. Okay, sorry. We think of someone who's jolly and warm and he's got a warm smile, right? What Rabbi Feuer told us was that's what Yitzchak looked like too. The greatness of Yitzchak was that his din, his harsh, exacting approach to Torah was demanding of himself in the service of Hashem. But when someone else saw him, that's why the Torah begins Parshas Toldos and tells us, Eile toledot Yitzchak ben Avraham. Avraham olidet Yitzchak. Yitzchak was the son of Abraham, and whoever saw Yitzchak thought he was seeing Abraham. Right? That's what our sages say, that Hashem made Yitzchak look just like Abraham. That means that Yitzchak, you got the same picture. It says people would walk into the room, they weren't sure which one is Yitzchak, which one was Avraham. That means that Yitzchak's countenance did not reflect that stern approach which Yitzchak took. That approach was internal. That was his service of Hashem. But to his fellow man, by what right do I give that approach? To his fellow man, he was the sweetest, kindest, warmest person. Okay, that's just a beautiful Dvar Torah I heard from Rabbi Feuer. Back to our Chazanish. And when a person overcomes his desire for instant gratification and works with the system, so then that really prepares him for being a person with a spirit. To have that spirit, to be able to have a spirit that overcomes adversity, one has to be able to withhold gain, to postpone pleasure. That's one of the greatest hallmarks. And Rav Sadia Gaon writes in his introduction to Mishlei, you want to summarize the whole book of Proverbs into one sentence? That's the sentence. Rav Sadia Gaon writes, he says, the whole of Proverbs can be summarized into that one concept. If I'm willing to withhold my instant gratification for long-term gain, I will benefit, I will prosper. If I'm going to be quick to decide and quick to try and get my instant gratification, so that's where I fall. That's the whole book of Proverbs in one sentence, Rav Sadia Gaon writes. U'machikato min hagasut tachlit harichuk. And when one has that self-control and adheres to the Shulchan Aruch, so then that will help him distance himself from being crass, from being animalistic, and it will bring him to the opposite extremity, to be refined, to be a fine person. That's what adherence to Shulchan Aruch in detail does. Now, I was debating whether we should learn this or skip this section, and I'll tell you why. There's a Dvar Torah that I don't like quoting here, but maybe you guys have to hear it. It says that Eliphaz ran after Yaakov to kill him, right? Yaakov stole the blessings from Esav. Esav called in his son or grandson Eliphaz and says, run after him and kill him. So Eliphaz catches up to Yaakov and he says, Yaakov, I know you're my uncle. I know you taught me Torah. I know you taught me I shouldn't kill. But my father told me to kill you. And we honor our father. And you also agree we should honor our father. So I think I'm going to have to kill you. So Yaakov says, you could take my money and then it's considered like I'm dead. And Eliphaz buys it, excuse the pun. And he takes the money and he leaves Yaakov and he comes home and says, Dad, I killed him. Here's all his money. So the basic question is, what's going on here? What kind of conversation is that? I have to kill you. He's coming with the logic. And he answers him, halachically, we could work it out this way. Why didn't Yaakov just tell him, halachically, you're crazy. What do you mean? You're going to murder? What kind of conversation is going on there? So the answer that's given, which I usually don't quote here, but at this juncture I'm going to say it, is that sometimes when a person is new to the observance of Judaism, so then a person is going to take the system and work it out in the most unnatural way. There was a woman who asked for a divorce. She came to the courts. They asked her, what's wrong? Why do you want to get divorced? True story. I know the person who was on the court when she walked in. And asked her the question, and she said, my husband's crazy. They asked her, why is your husband crazy? She said, every Friday night and Shabbos morning, when comes time to Kiddush, he takes the cup and dips his eyes into the cup. So no one else does that. He's crazy. So they asked the husband, do you do that? He said, yes. They asked him, why do you do that? He said, it says in Shulchan Aruch, Yiten Einav Bekos Shel Bracha. He should place his eyes in the cup of blessing. Now, yiten einav in Hebrew could mean look at, but it literally means place your eyes into. Place your eyes into the cup of blessing. So it's not to be read literally, but he thought it was to be read literally. So he said to them, that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. What do you want from me? I'm doing what it says in Shulchan Aruch. True story. Now, did this guy notice that whenever he was by Kiddush, by everyone else, no one else does that? So they're all wrong. But this idea... how come we've had students here who had a fleshik toothbrush and a milchik toothbrush and a parv toothbrush? You ever see anyone else have that?
No.
How come you go to the mikveh and you see people that have a special rubber band yarmulke so that when they go down, the yarmulke stays on their head and they go into the shower with that too? You see anyone else do that?
No.
But here in Machon Meir, it started and one guy did it, so everyone else thought it was a cool thing to do. And before long, you start having other people doing it. And they said, it's a pious thing to do. Look, so-and-so goes to Shavuot Yom Khan. I heard about it when it was already a fad. A third of the class was doing it. You know, and they were questioning those who don't. Right? That's when I got word of it. But you understand that can happen. that can happen. So in Machon Meir, it's a little bit more innocent because you don't know who to learn from. But this idea that when a person is new to things, then they can go all the way, all out, and reach extreme positions that will drive everyone crazy. Another unfortunate story was a guy who would take an hour to do Kiddush Friday night. And his kids were hungry, and his wife was hungry. And he said, that's how long it takes me to have Kavanah. I can't have intent in less than that. And he looks me in the eye seriously, and he says, you can't ask me to do it shorter. I said, you know, your kids are hungry. Your kids are you don't let them eat first, and you're taking this hour long to make Kiddush. I mean, the kids would run away, run out of the house, grab food, and start eating it outside, so you wouldn't see. They were hungry. Kids come home. But he said, it's a biblical mitzvah. You want me to do it without intent? True story. So the guy, that's why I was scared to learn this piece in the Chazon Ish. Because sometimes a person can take this and go off the handle. Meaning on the one hand, we're saying I have to adhere to the Shulchan Aruch, even where it's counterintuitive. On the other hand, one of the weaknesses that a person has when he hasn't grown up in an observant home is that a person doesn't know where the balance is. And that's why, on the one hand, what we just read in the Shulchan, in the Chazon Ish is 100% correct. On the other hand, you must see what other people are doing and maintain a balanced approach. Meaning, this is a balancing act. On the one hand, to adhere to the details of Shulchan Aruch. On the other hand, to maintain a pleasant atmosphere at home, to maintain things comfortable at home. The Talmud tells us there was a rabbi who was so observant, he was so stringent about every detail in halacha, that his servant slaughtered an animal, and suddenly one of its hind quarters disappeared. Someone walked off with it. They weren't sure who. But they knew if the rabbi saw it, they might get in trouble. So they took one of the live animal and hacked off one of its legs and stooped it on and brought it. And the Talmud says, because he was so stern in his adherence to halacha in the home, they almost fed him something that even an Ohite can't eat. Ever minachai. That's a limb off of a live animal. The Talmud says, you can't run a house where everything is strict and everyone's scared. The Talmud says that what's going to end up happening is Talmud. Your wife won't have lit the Friday candles on time, so she'll light them late. Because she wouldn't dare to have you walk into the house and the candles aren't lit. So this idea of the Chazon Ish, we have to know how to temper it. You can't just run a house where we're adhering to every detail, and so the atmosphere is an atmosphere of sternness, of severity. There has to be a calm and pleasant atmosphere within this system, where I try to adhere to the details, but I do it in a pleasant way, in a calm way, in a happy way. That's a balancing act. So that's why I wasn't sure if to learn this. Well, I didn't want to skip, but I do have to add this little footnote from Netan Al-Frankenthal.